We're in Hebrews 11 this morning. Hebrews 11, which is a pretty much familiar chapter to most. And what I want to do is I want to kind of get us to get our mind around it. This chapter has been called the Hall of Faith because it has all of this huge catalog of individuals who embodied faith. I want to give you a chance to look at it a little differently this morning. Because of our study, we see a context in which it is set. It is not an island unto itself. The book of Hebrews is all about the issue of faith. And the problem was is that the Hebrews who had been dispersed in the persecutions that they had to undergo, those people had begun to balk on their faith because somebody had torpedoed their faith. Have you ever had your faith torpedoed? I mean, there you are. You're really doing all you can to do the right thing and lean in and get to know God. And maybe everything spirals out of control, and that would be a torpedo. Or somebody comes in with an argument that you just don't know how to answer, and that might torpedo your faith. There are any number of things the devil has in his arsenal to try to torpedo us. Well, he tried to do the doctrinal thing, the issue of trying to cast doubt in the minds of the Hebrews. And so when we come to chapter 11, the context is all about how important faith is, the necessity of having faith. And what I want to do is I want to reframe this for us, because for those of us who've read our Bibles for many years, we've come to this chapter and we've understood it to be the Hall of Faith. And we look there for individual isolated cases of people who expressed their faith. But for our purposes today, I want you to be looking for a little word as we go through, and it's the little word for, F-O-R, because that little word helps us to divide this chapter up. He gives us a few people, and then he says, for, this is what they did. And every time he uses the word for in this chapter, he's giving us a little nuance about faith and what it looks like and how it's supposed to be expressed and how it really is part and parcel of our everyday life. It is impossible for you to live without faith. If you brushed your teeth this morning, you used probably a, I hope you did, just saying. But if you brushed your teeth this morning, you got toothpaste out and you squeezed some toothpaste on the tube, and your faith was that toothpaste was going to be all right. You put it in your mouth. Now, just for the ever record, you're not supposed to swallow. All right, just, you know. But the whole idea of just this living by faith is done every time you open up a bag of potato chips or open up some cereal, get some milk, get some product that somebody else has put together for you. Somebody at the restaurant. That's huge. My goodness. Somebody cooking your food. You don't know them. And if you're really, really bold, you send it back and say it's not quite done well enough, you know. Now, there's some faith going on now because it's coming back and you don't know what's happened between hither and yon, you know. So what I'm saying is we all live by faith, don't we? And I'll tell you something, folks. People today try to downplay faith because the devil has tried to make and frame the idea of faith as being some kind of a weak-kneed reality. But the Bible gives faith all in all of its glory set before us in chapter 11. It shows us that faith has so much going for it, and it's so important, not only in our everyday lives, which he doesn't deal with that so much. We've already talked about that in our few moments here. But he's talking about in your walk with God, faith is absolutely essential. It's a necessity. Look at verse 1 of chapter 11. The Bible says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good report. And that little word for shows up right out of the gate. Now, when you look at this verse, faith is the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen, I always felt like people who quoted that verse were really waxing very eloquent and felt really intelligent about how they were saying it. And I myself probably have as well, you know, at times quoted that verse, but early on. But after I really got walking with God for a while, I allowed myself the permission to ask myself, what in the world does that mean? Because, you know, you hate to ask, what does that mean? You don't want to sound like you don't know. But if I were to give you all a piece of paper this morning and say, write down what you think that means, I dare say we would have a lot of different expressions of what it means. Faith is the evidence. Faith is the substance. And I've seen different translations of this particular verse. But I want to give you the undercurrent of what he's saying. It's coming on the heels of chapter 10, where he says, you have need of endurance. These people needed to endure. They needed to be willing to keep stay the course and to keep themselves focused on Christ. And he tells them in verse 1 of chapter 11 that faith is the substance of things hoped for. And in the context, faith is the substance of things hoped for. If you take the word substance and understand what it means, it'll kind of flourish for you. The word means substrate. It means the foundation. It is the foundation of everything you have that you hope for. For you and for me, we live in America. We live in a time of prosperity. We live in a time of affluence. We can pretty much have whatever we want whenever we want it. If you've got a few coins or a few dollars in your pocket, you can have bananas in the middle of the winter. I mean, it's crazy. We can have coconuts. We can have a pineapple right now. Right now, you guys could leave here this afternoon, go to the market, and you could pick up stuff that the world could never have had in days past, in centuries past. We live in affluence. There's not much you can't have. I mean, you can pretty much go anywhere you want in your car. You can enjoy the right temperature wherever you are. You're not out chasing wood in the woods to get your house heated. You just turn a little button. It was a little chilly in here this morning. We just popped that button a couple times. And I saw George this morning. He pushed that button. He was sweating. It was so hard. No. But the point, it's so easy. We got it made. And you know, even a little snow on the road, people get kind of befuddled. Oh, it's so hard. I don't want to go. It's cold outside. I didn't put my toe outside the covers. I don't want to go. But the fact of the matter is we've got it easy. They did not. Up until about the 3rd century, actually the 4th century, early in the 4th century, 312 or so A.D., was when Constantine said, hey, Christians, we want to talk together. Let's get together and talk. And he said, you know, I'm kind of embracing this idea of Jesus. And you come in and you tell me about that. And pretty soon he made Christianity the state religion. Up to that point, everybody was hunting Christians. You have the Colosseum as a testament and a memorial of the fact that they would kill Christians. They would take women and young girls and they would tie their legs. If they were Christian, they would tie their legs and drag them behind chariots. And they would take a post with a little open top at the top. And they'd take the rope and they'd run it. And they'd run these girls upside down and they'd light their hair on fire as sport. They would throw people to the lions. And it got so bad, after a while, people had to come to terms with the fact I could die tomorrow. My wife could be taken from me tomorrow and be taken and put to the lions. Some people had to come to the grips with the fact their children could be killed. And today, people, today, our sensibilities are so far removed from that. See, about the time the church married the state and the church got a voice in the political arena, people laid their hope aside. They say, I don't care about heaven, man, it's pretty cool here. We get to eat great food, we get to sit at the king's table, we get to get good greetings in the marketplace. We are somebody. They didn't need heaven anymore. But prior to that, everybody would step up and say, hey, pick me, I'll go, just take me. And they got catacombs full of dead men's bones who were put to death in those 10 persecutions that took place in the first 3 centuries. So when he's talking to them, that's the barrel of the gun they're looking down. And he says to them, faith is the substrate, it is the foundation of everything you hope for. If you cast off Jesus, you've got nothing left. Now in our world, we think we've got it made. If I get sick and I get a diagnosis, I can go to the doctor and the doctor will fix me. Not always. But we delude ourselves to the very last minute that that's a possibility. If our house burns down, we've got insurance. If our car gets wrecked, we've got insurance. We got insurance on our insurance. Somebody sells you a blender, would you like the service plan on this? And you really got to look at that blender. And if it's pretty yellow or red, it matches your decor, you might say, well, man, I like my blender. You pay 50% more for the blender extended warranty. Because we have everything under control. Heaven's pretty good down here. My point is in the dark or the hottest part of the summer, you press a button, you got cool air blowing on you. These people had hope. And their hope was that they were going to go to heaven. And they really believed that. They were going to go to heaven. One day they were going to be with God. They were going to see Jesus and they were going to see their loved ones and they were going to be grandma and grandpa and Uncle Joe and the pastor that you wanted me to Jesus. He was going to be standing at the gates and he was going to give me a big hug and his face was going to be glowing and it was going to be glorious. That was their hope. You and I seldom ruminate and turn that over, but it's our hope. And he says, guys, don't throw your hope away, because hope is the foundation. Our faith, don't throw your faith away, because faith is the foundation of everything you hope for. Do you know how cool it's going to be to see people that you forgot love Jesus? People maybe you led to Jesus? You heard that song years ago, "Thank You for Giving to the Lord. I am a life that was changed." And some guy comes running across the halls of heaven. He says, "I was that little boy in your Sunday school class. And one day you prayed a prayer and I prayed with you. And I got saved that day. I know I don't look the same. I was just a little boy, but I got saved that day. Thank you for giving to the Lord." Those are huge things, but we have so many dazzling things, so many sparkling things, so many wonderful little things in our world that kind of distract us and say, "Well, that's pretty cool." You heard about the recent depression that has swept our nation. People went to see Avatar. I haven't seen it, but they said, "Boy, it was so wonderful and pretty, and it was so delightful." People were getting depressed because life on Earth wasn't like Avatar. I say, get a life. But they were. This was literally coming up in the radio. There were people reporting depression because they weren't like an Avatar. Man, it's better than Avatar. We got it going on. We are the masters of our universe. And we can't handle it. That's what's true. We can't handle it. Well, when he says this, he's saying it in that context. Faith is the substance of things hoped for. You need to keep a hold of your faith. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for. And this is the important thing. It's the evidence of things not seen. He says, you know, and not only if you cast off your faith, are you cutting your legs out from under you, but you're also cutting them out from other people. It's evidence. When you walk by faith and you have a flint-like face and you say, "I'll go, take me," and you're not worried about the fact that maybe they'll take your life or take your family's life, when you look at all that and you look it in the eye and you're willing with a conviction of soul and spirit and heart, and you have a principle that cannot budge, you are giving testimony to a holy God who they can't see, but they see Him in you. And when they see Him in you, God can use that. And He's fighting on the battlefield of ideas. Do not give up your faith, because faith is the substance of everything you, the substrate, the foundation of everything you hope for, and it's the evidence of everything that they can't see. You need to keep your faith intact. People are depending on you to believe and to behave accordingly. Look what he says in verse 2. "For by it," and there's that little word, you might underline it if you want to remember these little hangers, "for by it the elders obtained a good report." You see, the elders are all those people he's going to talk about in a minute. And they all obtained a good report, not only from God who put their names in Scripture, but by their generations who took note of the fact that these people were unique. And not all Israel was unique, but David was unique. Hiram, after David died, sent gifts to Solomon, saying, "You know, I heard about your dad passing, and I just want to send my condolences, and I hope our relationship will be the same as his." And he believed in God. He was one of the few Gentile kings who really got a clue about who God was because of the testimony of the people of Israel. Hiram the king, he was up in Tyre area in Sidon, and he sent in gifts because he got a clue. You see, David got a good report before Hiram. He got a good report among the Philistines too. Remember, he fell to the Philistines and they liked him. Joseph. What about Joseph being raised up there into Egyptian honor and became second only to Pharaoh by defining dreams? What about Daniel under the Babylonian captivity, who was brought into the king's court and was giving him dreams, interpretations of dreams that the king wouldn't even tell him what the dream was, but he could say, "My God has revealed to me what you dreamed, and here is the interpretation thereof." These guys got a good report. They got a good report on earth because that's what God's all about. God's all about you and me having real faith that is real evidence of a true God and getting a good report from other people. Our testimony matters. Do not drive by people in the road and raise your fist. Try to be careful about your face. I know you get bumped in that road. Somebody pulls out in front of you. Be careful about how you look and how you behave. I've been told that people who go to dinner after Sunday church are some of the worst people that the people in the restaurant see all week long. Have you heard that? They're persnickety and they think, "Well, my food's not well and it's not cold, or it's cold," and man, and they leave less of a tip and they're just not as nice of people, and they're kind of, they're just entitled. Now, frankly, folks, that's a disgrace. And that's not the kind of report God wants. And I trust it's not true of us. But the fact is we need to be mindful.